Well, as you can see, Dr. Ben Carson is our next speaker at the Des Moines Register Political Soapbox. Dr. Carson is a pediatric neurosurgeon. He was the longtime director of the Johns Hopkins Children's Center and is internationally renowned for his pioneering work in separation of conjoined twins. Very pleased to welcome Dr. Carson to the Register Soapbox.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I am delighted to be here. And I tell you, I've been to a lot of state fairs, but this is a state fair. I tell you, this is amazing. It is absolutely amazing. Wonderful people, wonderful food. And I want to thank all the people of Iowa, you know, who've been supporting me and helping the rest of the nation realize that we shouldn't let the professional class pick our presidents, you know, and that's a very, very good thing. Now, what an incredible land we live in here. You know, a lot of people like to complain about America and about the bad things that we have done and the bad people who are here. But interestingly enough, when you stop and think about it, we got a lot of people trying to get in here. I don't see anybody trying to escape. So therefore, I don't think it's that bad a place. And it certainly was a great place of dreams for me. You know, as a youngster, I wanted to be a doctor. Skipped right over policemen and firemen and went right to doctor. And I just loved everything that had to do with medicine. I wasn't a very good student. We were desperately poor. There was never money for anything. The only time we could ever go to the Michigan State Fair was when we got those special coupons so that you could get in free, but they didn't have any money to buy any rides, buy any popcorn. I never tasted cotton candy until I was an adult, and it wasn't that good. But maybe they should have tried frying it. But anyway, but, you know, I had a wonderful mother who believed in me when nobody else did, and made us read. And as I read books, and particularly as I read books about people of accomplishment, I came to a fundamental understanding that the person who has the most to do with what happens to you in life is you. It's not somebody else. And, you know, that liberated me. Gave me a new lease on life. And things were going along well, that is, until I got to high school. And then I ran into the worst thing a person can run into. It's called peers. Negative peers. P-E-E-R-S. That stands for people who encourage errors, rudeness, and stupidity. And that's exactly what they were doing. And you know, the sad thing is, it doesn't end in high school. It continues throughout life. And we have that problem right now with so many people who allow other people to think for them and do for them. And we're rude and we're discourteous. All you have to do is go to the an article and then go to the comment section. You will not get down five lines before people start calling each other nasty names and acting like third graders. Apologies to any third graders out there. You know, it is very sad what we have allowed ourselves to degenerate into. But there I got caught up in that peer pressure, and they're trying to tell you what kind of clothes to wear, who you should be hanging out with, and how you should be thinking. And I went from an A student to a B student to a C student. My grades kept plummeting. I didn't care because I was cool, getting the high fives, the low fives, the pats on the back, doing the Detroit strut, you know. I mean, I was cool. And fortunately, I only wasted 1 year before my mother was able to get me to understand that it wasn't what you wore on the outside, it's what you had up here that made the difference. And I got back on the right track, and I was an A student, and the guys were calling me Nerd and Poindexter and Uncle Tom and every name you can imagine. But I would always shut them up by saying, let's see what you're doing in 20 years, and let's see what I'm doing in 20 years. And they must have believed me, because when I graduated from high school, they all voted me most likely to succeed, which means they knew what was important. They were too lazy and trifling to do it themselves, and they wanted other people with them. Misery loves company. But you know, when I got back on the right track, I had a goal. I wanted to be a contestant on my favorite TV show, which was GE College Bowl. Anybody remember GE College Bowl? Yeah, okay, there's some old people here. It was cool. You know, it came on every Sunday, and they had four contestants on each team, two different colleges, and they would ask questions about science, math, history, geography. I was really good in all that stuff. But they would also ask questions about classical art and classical music. Now, there was no way you were going to learn any classical art or classical music at Southwestern High School in inner city Detroit. I mean, in my high school, if you said something about Van Gogh, they would have said, put gas in it, the van will go. I mean, they had no idea what you were talking about. So I just made an executive decision. I would get on the bus day after day, week after week, month after month, and travel down to the Detroit Institute of Arts, roam through those galleries until I knew every picture who painted them, what period it represented, listening to my portable radio, Bach, Telemann, Mozart. Kids in Detroit thought I was nuts. A black kid in Motown listening to Mozart. You know, I tried to convince them that the Mo in Motown was Mozart, but nobody was buying it. And I even determined which college I was going to attend based on that show. I was going to apply to the college that won the grand championship in College Bowl because I only had enough money to apply to one college. Well, the grand championship was between Harvard and Yale. And Yale demolished Harvard, so I didn't want to go to a school with a bunch of dummies. So, you know, I applied to Yale, and fortunately, they accepted me with a scholarship. And I was gung-ho. I was going to be a contestant on College Bowl. But the year I went there was the year that College Bowl went off the air. I know, it's a sad story. But, you know, but years later, when I decided I wanted to be a neurosurgeon, I said, well, what's the best place for neurosurgery? The place most well-known was Johns Hopkins. Cushing, Dandy Walker, all the famous names. The only problem is they only took two people a year out of the top 125 applicants. So how was I going to get to be one of them? Well, when I went for my interview, the fellow in charge of the neurosurgery program was also in charge of cultural affairs at the hospital. So we talked a little bit about medicine and neurosurgery. Somehow the conversation turned to classical music. And we talked for over an hour about different composers, conductors, orchestras, orchestral halls. The man was on cloud nine. There was no way he wasn't taking me in the program because he had to have somebody to discuss this stuff with. And, you know, and I tell young people all the time how important it is, how vitally important it is to learn everything because you never know what doors will be opened for you. And, you know, people like to pigeonhole and categorize people. You know, a lot of the left-wing media, for instance, say, Carson, he's a neurosurgeon. He's probably very gifted, but he's an idiot savant. He doesn't know anything else about anything else. You know, that's what they think. But no, in fact, with the kind of brains that God endowed us with, we do not have to limit ourselves in any capacity whatsoever. The human brain is the most magnificent organ system in the universe. I mean, it remembers everything you've ever seen, everything you've ever heard, can process more than 2 million bits of information in 1 second. How many people remember your birthday? Let me just see your hand. Okay, you haven't eaten too much fried food. Okay, this is good. Now, what did your brain have to do for you to respond to that question almost immediately? Just to give you an example of how complex your brain is. First of all, the sound waves had to leave my lips, travel through the air, enter your external auditory meatus, travel down to the tympanic membrane, set up a vibratory force, which traveled across the ossicles of the middle ear to the oval and round window, set up a vibratory force in the endolymph, which mechanically distorted the microcilia, converting mechanical energy to electrical energy, which traveled across the cochlear nerve to the cochlear nucleus at the pontomedullary junction, from there to the superior olivary nucleus, ascending bilaterally up the brainstem to the lateral meniscus and the inferior collecting to the... on and on and it goes, but the point being, your brain is so sophisticated, and so many things happen for you to do almost nothing. So can you imagine what the human brain can do if you really concentrate on it? And I believe that we, the American people, have the ability to solve the many problems that face us. You know, I think immediately about the things that threaten to destroy us, like the divisiveness that is going on in our society. I got to tell you a secret. We, the American people, are not each other's enemies. The enemies are those people who are trying to make us think that we're each other's enemies. And we have to be smart enough. And, you know, just because you disagree with somebody about something, it doesn't make them your enemy. Somebody that you need to smear and try to destroy their life and all these things that are going on in our society. And I always say if two people agree about everything, one of them isn't necessary. And I think everybody is necessary, so we just need to get over that, put that behind us. And, you know, the problems that threaten to destroy us as a nation, they are not Democrat problems. They are not Republican problems. They are American problems versus un-American. And we have got to remember that we are Americans first. It makes all the difference in the world. And there are many who do not want us to realize that. The other thing that we can easily solve with our complex brains are the fiscal problems that face us. We are in the process of destroying the future for the next generation. You know, I spent my whole professional career looking out for the welfare of children. And believe me, I was looking forward to retirement and putting my feet up, but I really couldn't, knowing what was going to happen to their future if we continue down the same route. And I got to tell you, it's been both Democrats and Republicans who have been blowing up the budget and destroying the future for our young people. You know, we hear about the national debt, $18.5 to $19 trillion. I mean, we can say those numbers, but do we understand what they mean? Just back it up to $18 trillion. To pay off $18 trillion at a rate of $10 million a day, 365 days a year, it would take you more than 5,000 years. And that's what we are putting on the backs of our young people. And as Thomas Jefferson said, that is immoral, and we have to stop doing. But I got to tell you something. That's the good news, okay? The real problem is the fiscal gap. When you go home today, please look up the fiscal gap. That is the unfunded liabilities that the government has, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all the governmental programs, all the stuff that we owe going forward versus the revenues we expect to collect from taxes and other revenue sources. Those two numbers should be virtually identical if you're responsible. You bring it forward to today's dollars, and they're not the number together. It's called the gap. That's the fiscal gap. That number now sits at $211 trillion. Okay, that is a staggering amount. Now, I announced that when I made my announcement for running for president in Detroit, and the next day, left-wing media came out and said, see, we told you Carson doesn't know anything about economics. What is he talking about, this fiscal gap? He's crazy. But the day after that, Forbes came out with an article that said 17 Nobel laureates and 1,200 economics professors agree with Carson. Well, that kind of put a stop to that. But the fact of the matter is the only reason we can sustain that kind of debt is because we can print money, which we are doing irresponsibly, and that is a privilege that generally goes with the number one economy in the world, which we have been since the 1870s until very recently, last year, when China took over. And how much longer will it be that we can print money? Because if we can't and we have that level of debt, guess what's going to happen? It will be much worse than 1929 and the stock market crash. It'll be horrible. And you know, you never hear any politicians talking about this. But I'm not a politician, so I can talk about it. Because you see, they want to get reelected, and I want to save our nation. And I think together, using our brains, we can save our nation. And you know, one of the really cool things that I learned as a neurosurgeon, one of the cases of conjoined twins that we were doing, you know, they were joined at the top of the head, facing in the same direction. And I made an executive decision. We had the number one neurosurgery department in the country with people who were terrific in vascular neurosurgery, in skull-based neurosurgery, in tumor tissue separation. We had a whole host of the best of the best. And rather than me just doing the operation and getting the credit, I got 18 of the neurosurgeons involved, and we slotted them in when we got to the part of the operation where they would be the expert, and we were literally 10 hours ahead of schedule. That's what can happen when you don't care who gets the credit, you just want to solve the problem. And that's what we need to do now. You know, I've been fortunate enough to meet all kinds of incredible people, just amazing people in this country, and they are willing to help. They're willing to help turn our government from an inefficient behemoth to something that operates like an efficient business. That's what we have to do. You know, you may not know this, but I spent many years in the business world, 18 years on the board of Kellogg, 16 years on the board of Costco, as well as starting a national nonprofit and being the chairman of the board of a biomedical group. So, you know, I've had a lot of experience, but what that experience has taught me is that there are a lot of people who are truly geniuses when it comes to business and running things, and they are willing to help us, and they're people in other areas. And we have to take advantage, because that's what it is. That's why we're called the United States of America, because we have so much talent. And if we focus it in the right way and stop worrying about me being right and you being right and my way or the highway, we will be a very different nation. And lastly, let me just say, we have to stop listening to these people who tell us that we cannot talk about God, we cannot talk about our faith. I wonder, do they realize that our founding document, our Declaration of Independence, talked about certain inalienable rights given to us by our Creator, a.k.a. God? Do they know that the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag says we are one nation under God? That many courtrooms on the wall, it says, in God we trust. Every coin in our pocket, every bill in our wallet, says, in God we trust. So if it's in our founding documents, it's in our pledge, it's in our courts, and it's on our money, but we're not supposed to talk about it, what in the world is that? In medicine, we call it schizophrenia, a form of craziness. And, you know, it's time for us to realize that there is nothing wrong with living by godly principles of loving your fellow man, caring about your neighbor, developing your God-given talents to the utmost so that you become valuable to the people around you, having values and principles that govern your life. And if we do that, not only will we remain a pinnacle nation, but we will truly have one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. Thank you so much.